It's the Fri-Yay Cocktail, presented by Anna Glavinsky.
David Cohn joins us now. He's the author of Spain, Modern Architectures in History. So it's a book that explores Spain's rich and complex history and how it's reflected in its buildings. And, you know, you travel around Spain. You know, we're based here in Spain in Talk Radio Europe, and there is some mad stuff out there. And different areas have their own sort of feel to them. So I'm really looking forward to speaking to David now, and I hope that he can break that down a bit for us. David, how are you doing?
Very good, thanks.
It's great to have you on the line. What inspired you to write this book?
Well, I've been a journalist and critic of architecture here in Spain for professional magazines in the UK and the United States for more than 30 years. And so it was a natural outgrowth of those years, watching Spain grow with its democracy and new public works and so on and so forth.
And so how long have you been in Spain? You are based in Spain, I believe.
I am. I'm in Madrid. I married a Spaniard in 1986, a Spanish woman.
Oh.
And we've been here since then.
And obviously the architecture piques your interest. How long has your career been in architecture, and how did you get into that passion in the first place?
I think I was always a fan, and I studied architecture after my undergraduate work at Columbia. So I worked as an architect for several years in New York. But I think my passion was also for writing and observing. And so that came together when I found myself in Spain. And there was a lot to tell the English speaking world about an architecture here that for many reasons is rather unknown.
So what are some of those unknown things? Obviously, Spain had a pretty turbulent 20th century. Lots of things happened.
As did we all.
fair point. But how was that reflected in its architecture?
Well, yes, it had these radical breaks. Every time there was there began to be a modest modern architecture in the 1920s and 30s. The victory of the Franco regime completely cut that off, and they had dreams of a nationalist monumental style. And they quickly discovered in 1949, they officially declared that they were no longer interested in monumental buildings, but in building. They had the desperate need to rebuild the country, and they needed to use modern techniques and accept modern architecture. So the whole game began again. And then with democracy, there was another break. It was the height of what's known in the architectural world as the postmodern movement. There was a return to historic forms. There was a new interest in the city. There was the awareness that the modern world was not going to replace the old world, but was being inserted in it. And architects took stock of that, and that became very important. And even now, with the there was a tremendous boom in public architecture because of a tremendous need for all kinds of buildings, from the most visible or concert halls and museums and that kind of thing, but schools and medical clinics and sports facilities and so on were all designed with competitions, and often with design competitions, and very good architects at different levels, local or national or international, became involved. And Spain has really been, in the last 30 years, a hot spot in the world for the most contemporary and advanced work.
I didn't know that about competitions. That's really exciting. So could you give me an example of maybe a brief that they would send out, and what sort of responses they would get?
Yeah, well, if it's a really important commission, they would try to line up a pre-list of maybe five of international firms, and including a nationally known architect like Rafael Moneo. And so results of that have been kind of mixed, I would say, but the Cursal in San Sebastian by Moneo was the result of a national competition. The infamous Galician's City of Culture was won by an American, Peter Eisenman. It was never finished. It's very wild and controversial. In the case of Madrid, the Barajas Airport was a competition. And the addition to the Reina Sofia Museum of Contemporary Art, the Barajas Airport, it was the Terminal 4 that was designed by a British firm, Richard Rogers.
Wow. And how much do you think the architecture of Spain, you know, in the time period that you cover in your book, was influenced sort of by a top-down approach? You know, how much was the government influencing style and design, and how much were individual creatives putting into the, you know, the landscape that we see in the architecture today?
Well, that's an interesting question. The architects pretty much had it in their own hands to decide the styles and so on, but they did respond to the kinds of commissions that they had in hand. A public work is not the same as designing a private home. And the truth is that public work is what has dominated in the last 30 years, all the way down to public housing. I think it's interesting, in the boom of housing in the turn of the century, the most interesting work was not the on the market housing, but the stuff done for publicly assisted housing. It has a standard that's much higher, and the designs that are often much more humane and welcoming, I would argue.
And what about external trends as well? You know, you very lightly touched on this already, but you know, could you explain to us how much Spain has been influenced by other countries' architecture, and how much they've just sort of looked inwards and done things their own way?
Right. Well, I think you have to divide the public clients from the architects themselves.
Right.
The public clients have been wild for international work, and of course, the most famous international work completed in Spain in the last 30 years is the Guggenheim in Bilbao by an American, who is Frank Gehry. That really was the work of its moment in the entire world. It had a huge impact on the United States and everywhere. It marked the beginning of a new exuberance in architecture, brought on by computers in design and in fabrication, that allowed architects to do things they could never have imagined before. But at the same time, the community of architects in Spain is very tight. It's a very much of a master and disciple kind of profession through the schools of architecture and in the studios of well-known architects. And it's been very conservative, which has protected it from a lot of the wilder trends that have sort of all blown up with 2008 and the economic crisis, the so-called icon building. So Spanish the work by Spanish architects tends to be much more contained and rigorous and has a longer lifespan, I would again argue.
Interesting. And we have listeners all over Spain. How do regional differences influence architectural styles? And could you just describe some of the sort of regional or cultural differences, and then what the architecture in those areas look like, so that people can sort of get a sense of, oh, I live there and I've seen that, and oh, I get it now.
Well, it's hard to sum up, because Spain has so many different regions and cultural differences, and architecture might be a little bit more difficult. But local architects have been very sensitive to the traditions, particularly in Galicia. There's a wonderful architect named César Portela, who has used the forms of the canning factories in the fishing towns as for museums and for libraries, and has gone back to granite and galleries for his private houses, for example. And of course, you have in rural areas, you see too an interest in more popular and traditional ways of building, which have a big comeback now with sustainability. I think the two important centers of architecture, of course, are Barcelona and Madrid, and also you find important work in Valencia and Seville. But it's all over, actually, because our Spanish architects can work all through.
Yeah, and the regions are so autonomous, you know, they end up having their own personal style. Like, if you were going to go to Barcelona, for example, what would people expect to see? What makes it different or gives it its own identity, and then compare that with Madrid?
No, that's an interesting question, but I'm not sure that I can answer it. I'm not sure there's a lot of a difference that you couldn't tell if you took two buildings, one from Barcelona and one from Madrid, that were done in the last 30 years. I don't think you would notice much of a difference. Mm-hmm. Manet's worked in Barcelona. There aren't many Barcelona architects who have worked here. But I guess they're both, as the urban feeling of the cities is very different and always has been. Barcelona is a design city,
yeah,
and very occupied about what their street lights look like, and what their benches, and they're very modern. They want to be very modern. And Madrid, traditionally, they've been reviving the old 19th century street lights, and they have, it's not such a hip and advanced city. There was a time when Alberto Ruiz Gallardón was both first the president of the Community of Madrid and then the mayor, or al revés, I'm not sure, where he did promote a lot of advanced architecture, but he was also the one who put the city hall back in the old post office at Cibeles, this wonderful, crazy turn of the century, the building full of towers and turrets.
Yeah, I love that. You know, I also love that attention to detail there, you know, talking about the different benches and street lights and way of doing things. It's like, it's an attention to detail that can really encourage people to look around and appreciate these sort of day-to-day things that perhaps, you know, non-architects might not take the time to consider when they're walking around their own cities.
Yes, it's amazing to see plazas that are paved in stone. Even in when I was in Cordoba, I was astonished to find the sidewalks in parts of the city are huge slabs of stone. That's just wonderful.
Wow. Now, I'm going to be really cheeky here, but it's just too serendipitous to have you online. Because this week, I've been like on scraps of paper sketching out my dream home, because potentially, I'm crossing my fingers, there's still a long way to go to get past that hurdle, but potentially I might become a first-time buyer here in Spain for a little campo. Great. House in the hills in Andalusia. So what...
Wow.
Yeah. Fingers crossed. Watch this space. Yeah. But what advice would you give it to me when it comes to designing with, you know, the country's architectural traditions in mind? What would you say that I should bear in mind?
Oh, well, I guess the thing is to be curious and to see what's around the wonderful white villages of Andalusia, for example. If you're in the village, you should try to fit in with that style or stand out. And if it's an independent house in the country, it's not so much of an issue. But I think the important things now that architects talk about is to make it as sustainable as possible, that you need as little energy as possible to maintain it, and those are techniques that are as old as farm buildings in Spanish towns. You know, the thick walls, the small windows, in the case of historic works.
Yes.
You know, and the orientation in terms of the sun and the wind, those are things that are very important, and you know, kind of digging in into the land, because the earth is also a great way to temper the extremes of the climate here. So I would think in terms of that, of the local climate and how you respond to it, and looking at the ways that architecture has always responded to it in the area that you're thinking of.
Do you know what? I love that you said that. You've given me so much fuel to back up my own argument against my parents and my husband, who have taken on the sort of British idea of huge windows. You know, they're like, oh, but the view is so beautiful. You want to have a massive window in the house looking in the view. And I'm like, no, because there's land. I'm not worried about having too much light. And I can see that influence of, you know, in so many new build houses around here, they've all got those massive windows to take in the beauty. I get it. But in the heat of the summer, what I want is a cave. Like you mentioned, the thick walls, small windows. Right. And to have somewhere to hide.
One of the great things that modern architects in Spain have done in response to that is if you have a big window, but you cover it with a very deep eave, you'll protect it from the direct sun and you'll still keep the view. So there are other, that's another way to approach that. But then there are other architects who purposely put small windows because, on the one hand, they want to frame the view and they want to save it as something special. If it's spread out there in front of you all the time, it's not so special anymore after a while, no?
Yes, it's absolutely right. Yeah, you're absolutely right. Right, you've just saved a massive family argument, so thanks very much.
Well, at least you've got more ammunition on your side.
Exactly. I'm armed with the words from a professional, so I win. And finally, David, if we just, you know, wrap up, what is the experience that you hope readers will get from reading your book? What do you hope that they'll take away from it?
Well, it's really to understand a very little known and complex story that has lots of wonderful moments and incidents and figures. It's a lively story. And it goes back to the, I take it back to the Museum of the Prado in the 1700s, but the architecture of Madrid, I mean, of Spain in the 1910s and 20s and 30s and 50s and 70s is fantastic. I don't know if your readers know, for example, if they've ever seen the Torres Blancas, or white towers at the entrance to Madrid from the airport from the 60s, organic, brutalist is what they call it now. It's a fantastic work. And when outsiders discover that, they can't believe that they didn't know that this work existed, because it's a huge contribution to what we think of as architecture of the 1960s, for example.
Great. Absolutely great. And is it a picture book? Do we have
it's got pictures. It's about 200 photos, but it is a pretty dense go. It's a text. It's a book of text, and because there's so many dates and figures and people and buildings, it has been written with the student in mind. But for anyone who is a fan of architecture, I think it would be worth their while, even to know, you know, a little bit more about the place where they are living, and see what it's all about.
Exactly, super information rich. Well, I really appreciate that, David. Thank you so much for joining us today, and I hope you have a wonderful weekend.
Pleasure.